You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It is the Anfield Wrap, Neil Atkinson with Phil Blundell, Damien Cavanagh and Dan Morgan. To talk about what we don't know as the new season starts, Jurgen Klopp is currently chatting away. Liverpool are away in their pre-season camp. We know that Trent Alexander-Arnold isn't there for an injury. So we're going to get stuck into all the things that we still do not know and have no sense of and ask those questions and wonder where the answers will be. We were going to start the show with a minute silence for the loss of the hopes and dreams of the people of Manchester, but we've decided it won't make great audio, so we will crack on instead and ask questions about the mighty boys in red. And there's so much that we don't know, Damien, and it's worth just sort of putting the timescale in. I think this is almost unprecedented. It's 14 days, less than 14 days to the Charity Shield, Community Shield. It's less than 28 days to the start of the season. We don't know what we're doing in pre-season. We don't know what the fixture list looks like and who we're playing when. We don't really know what our rivals will look like, what they're going to be doing. We're not really settled on what our squad's going to be in terms of ins and outs. We are all just a little bit up in the air, and I've never quite known anything like it in this run of things that have been unprecedented because of the pandemic. This is one more unprecedented thing sneaking up on us.
Oh yeah, Tefo, I haven't got a clue about anything. I mean, what a show this is going to be. Let's talk about something we've got completely no idea about at all. We've just got to live in the moment, haven't you, when things are like this. And we can console ourselves with the fact that it'll be very disorganised. And even if it's well organised, it's something with so much short notice, there's not much you can actually do about it. And I'm sure there's clubs out there with great dreams and ideas that you might have had 12 months ago. They've got absolutely no chance of sorting themselves out in that direction. But we've got the greatest team in the world. And there's not much that needs fixing. And I think personally, looking at Liverpool, you know, last year, the best signings that we made was to keep the best players that we had. And very much we have what we hold. And so when it's all disorganised and it's all like, I don't know, the Grand National just before you start and the horses are jockeying before that rope, before that line, where am I going to be? I'm glad what we've got. And as long as we just maintain our focus, and I think we'll be all right.
The certainties are really interesting, Dan, in that there is one clear one, as Damien's just phrased it there. The certainties are the points gap from last season. The certainty is that Liverpool have put two 90-point-plus seasons in back-to-back. I'm going to ask you at the end of all this what points total you'd take. But the certainties are that we know these players, the manager knows these players, the manager's now been there for as long as he has. They're the things that you can hold on to be quite honest with you. Football often feels as though it's all about changes, it's all about looking for constant improvements. The one thing Liverpool can be sure of is how good their side has been for 2 years, and so therefore how unlikely it is to fall dramatically from that position.
Yeah, I mean, the other certainty is 10:34 and being out till 5 a.m. doesn't mix. so I'm suffering for that. Weekend aside, I think what sort of drives them and sort of corroborates the manager and the coaching staff to an extent is the day-to-day, the training. And I think, you know, we know about the intensity. We know sort of how much they drive levels up in training. And I think he's probably known from maybe the first hour in Austria of getting them on a pitch, of going, yeah, you know, we've nothing to worry about here. The intensity is as it was. It certainly looks like it is from the clips and stuff like that. So sort of what he knows is a lot of it tied up in the day-to-day, I think. And that, like I say, isn't just training. It's sort of how they conduct themselves in terms of the conversations they're having with each other, the manner in which they're sort of inquiring about how they can look after themselves, them themselves sort of maybe looking at schedules and seasons and asking questions, conversations they're having about this international break coming up, for example, all of that. It's definitely a loosening of the shoulders, and I think, you know, we'll come on to it, but there's so much uncertainty now, especially even around sort of financial situations for teams. And as Damien says, it's sort of Liverpool's body of work over the last 3 or 4 years that's enabled them not to have the headaches that others will have as a result of COVID, but also as a result of sort of years of indecision and poor decision making.
Years of indecision, poor decision making, not having to live those realities, Phil, is a certainty that is useful for Liverpool. I think it is fair to say that. In amongst all this, the other thing that's clear as well is that with the Carabao Cup rounds being played early, as was made clear by the excellent Dale on ESPN, the 13 clubs in Europe won't have any midweek football from the start of October until the midweek of December the 15th. Now, that then intensifies massively for those clubs into December and January, and by then the clubs that do have European football will be very used to it. But it is worth sort of saying, isn't it, that, and this does happen in a normal season, but Liverpool will spend the first half of the season most likely playing sides of a weekend who've had a full week to prepare for the challenge of the Mighty Boys in Red, whereas Liverpool will have had European engagements.
Yeah, it is. It's one thing you see quite often as something that does impact things. I mean, I was looking before, and the last time Liverpool dropped a point in December, for example, Virgil van Dijk played for Southampton. So when it does get congested, it plays massively into our hands, and we've almost just got to get to the point where the fixture list is congested. Because it's not going to be easy to go from playing. I mean, we could potentially play a Champions League game in Azerbaijan, in theory, and then 3 days on a Wednesday, and then 3 days later we're playing away at Burnley, and that's not something you want to do. We're going to have to basically just hang in there for 2 or 3 months, I think, and sort of probably play players that you sort of wouldn't have expected us to. If you go back 6 months before this whole thing started, I think there's an opportunity for players who you would have thought would have had certainty that would have been out the door and now probably going to be involved more than you would have thought, a lot more than you would have thought in some cases. Like Shaqiri, for example, I think if you go back to January, I reckon the chances of Jadon Shaqiri playing for Liverpool were very slim. I now think Jadon Shaqiri could play 15 to 20 games for Liverpool next season. I think the swing in this is massive in terms of he's just going to be able to keep Mohamed Salah or Sadio Mane or Roberto Firmino a little bit fresher and enable you to get a little bit more out of them in certain times, because ultimately there's going to be games where playing Jadon Shaqiri at home is absolutely fine. There's going to be games where you don't want to see it, but there's going to be games where it's absolutely fine and something that we should definitely do to manage the squad a bit better. And it's a lot of this is going to be about squad management, because the only certainty that you've got this season is that everybody is guessing, from budgets, from how you manage your squad, to basically every aspect of this summer and beyond is just guessing.
Come back to you on this, Phil, quickly on the idea of European football, Premier League football. We still don't know what the Premier League fixture list is. We won't actually know what the Champions League draw is until October, will we? So the idea of being able to plan around that's going to be very difficult for this Liverpool side. They're going to struggle to be able to plan. Well, they won't even know sort of the rhythms of where they'll be, what flight they'll have got off. You know, the idea of the old Ferguson thing that you write your ideal teams out up until, say, February in July is absolutely impossible. It's been impossible for this manager. He's not even going to know at this stage, as I say, until those Champions League qualifiers are all played, are all finished. He's not actually going to even know who the Champions League opposition is for October, November and early December.
No, I mean, the fixture list could kill you. It could completely ruin your season by December. Just the simple fact that, I mean, we've played Chelsea and Manchester City in consecutive games before. We've seen that happen. If you have to go away to Chelsea and then maybe away to Real Madrid, for example, although we can't play Real Madrid, but you take your point, Barcelona, we could play Chelsea, Barcelona, Manchester City all away in the space of 8 days. That's hard, because that then may be a situation where you get off to a flyer in the Champions League group, you win your first four games, and your last two group games in the Champions League, you could play me and you, and it wouldn't matter. And being able to do something like that gives you then an advantage in the league and the Champions League for later on in the season.
One of the things that this side does really well, Damien, and again, to deal with the certainties before we go through all the questions, is it recovers well from adversity. And it deals with adversity well, adversity within games and then sort of individual bits of adversity that happens. We've got lots of evidence of that. And that could well be, I think, a bit of a defining factor for this season. The scenario Phil's just painted there, whilst extreme, you know, it is very possible that each of the contenders for major honours has a week and a half, 2 weeks where it feels like nothing's going right for them. And it's how you deal with that that I think is gonna define a lot. It may be a bit of an old style race for the title than one where, for instance, we do what we did last season, which is get to play 27-1, 26, draw and one.
Well, yeah, you know, and like I said before, that this, I mean, I thought Phil explained it very well there. You know, the schedule has got the potential to be horrific for Liverpool, but that schedule is going to be the same for our rivals, isn't it? And these lads have been round the block, and as long as we've got certainties and we don't have to move too many, we all know what the best 11 is and the best three subs are and that. And if we just have what we hold and start the season in the same manner as we started last season and attack it, our opponents will be frightened about that because they know what we can do. And they know that if we go a goal down or the game's not going our way, we can hang in there and we'll get the results. We can grind it all out. That'll be in the minds of our opponents. It's just, I can't think of a circumstance where it suits a team better than it does Liverpool at this particular moment in time. And that'll be the big conversation. And it'll be like, you know, listen, lads, let's be honest, we won the league by December last year. We could have to do it again this year, you know. And I just think with the uncertainty, with the fixture, you're quite right. How can you plan for, you know, the European thing? And usually you've got that luxury. It's just a question of keep the intensity of the training, keep the personnel. Well, don't bring too many players in because, you know, they're going to have to be integrated. We haven't got time for any of that. We've got too many games and too many points you could lose. We've got a system here and we've got some fringe players. Quite right, the Shaq, for example, he's perfectly fine to play at home on certain games when opposition are not going to come out their own half. We've got options. It's good. I'm confident.
It's question there is, Damien says, Dan, you know, not going to, don't add too many. The Thiago thing's all a little bit wild. There's lots and lots of links from outside the country acting as though he's Liverpool bound. Inside, those who are close to the club are repeatedly, not strongly denying things as we've seen in the past, but saying, well, that doesn't correspond with anything that we've heard. It's all a little bit unorthodox, a little bit mad. I can, you know, I oscillate on it really in terms of whether or not I'm in favour of it. He's clearly a fantastic footballer. He is also 29. There's a bit of an injury history there. There's a few little bits and pieces, but you come back to the idea that he is a fantastic footballer. And we're sitting here saying these games are going to come thick and fast. And the one thing we can say, looking at the manager in 18-19 and parts of 19-20, is, you know, the number of times you'll say, well, he's not really changed the back four and he's not really changed the front three, but he will change the midfield. And I wonder if whether or not Liverpool adding one more genuine quality midfielder may well help them be able to be fresh game after game after game after game.
Yeah, I said on the gutter the other day, I think my sort of Thiago opinion is, my stance on him is that if we do sign him, you'll see a lot more 4-4-2, 4-2-3-1. And I think that plays into the fixture conversation a little bit. I think you can arguably, knowing what we know now about international fixtures and League Cup fixtures, etc., you can maybe argue that you can split this season into two. And in almost an 18-19 type of way, the first half will look very different to the second half when you're looking at Liverpool teams and how they line up, etc. So maybe he's seen something there. It is a strange one. It can't be said. The thing I can't sort of find a commitment to on either side is that it feels like everyone's given themselves an out. Mm. That if it does happen, Liverpool can say, well, yeah, we told you no, but the situation changed. You know, just as it did with Alisson, for example, when Roma were asking for €90 million and then they lowered it to 60. And then there's the journalists who are saying, yeah, that's done between the player and the club, but it isn't done between the club and the club. And in 2 or 3 weeks' time, you feel like they can say, well, yeah, I wasn't lying. Bayern and Liverpool just couldn't agree a fee. So whilst people are simultaneously, you know, making very forthright statements about it, it still feels like they're giving themselves a little bit of wiggle room to sort of defend themselves should it not happen or should it happen. And it's a really, really funny situation for many reasons. I mean, we don't know whether this is sort of Wijnaldum related, Wijnaldum sort of strategy related for Liverpool. Liverpool might be, you know, trying to force a decision out of Wijnaldum one way or another, and these links are maybe doing that a favour or not. I'm not sure. Have Liverpool seen something in Wijnaldum's numbers that says that they're not going to renew and therefore they're looking at Thiago as a like for like? I don't know. But yeah, it's it certainly feels like something that is going to be, I think it's going to be dictated to, obviously, after Bayern likely compete in the Champions League final. And then we'll just have to see with it, I guess.
Are you expecting him to do anything else, Dan? It's interesting. I'm not saying he's going to be involved this season. The manager will go out of his way to say that he won't be involved this season. But, you know, Kumetio's gone our way on the training camp. Vandenberg's around. Hover's around. There's a lot of talk around centre-half. Could he use Fabinho back there if he wanted to? Maybe could he do with somebody? This doesn't, to me, feel like a season where you necessarily buy a fourth-choice centre-half who's of a certain age. There's still the links persisting with Ismaïla Sarr. Do you think he'll do anything, or do you think they're done?
No, I think it's funny because we've sort of moved the other way from everyone else, in the sense that there was mutants of sort of big summers from other sides, and then sort of the financial reality has hit, and everyone else seems to kind of put the brakes on. We've sort of said we're not doing anything, and then, you know, we've seen a little bit more flexibility in that type of attitude over the last couple of weeks. You've seen Tsimikas obviously come in. I think there's every chance that Liverpool sign Ismaïla Sarr towards the end of the window. I think it depends on Watford and if they sort of become a bit more realistic in terms of what they're asking for with him. Centre-half, I think they'll have a plan. And I wouldn't imagine that sort of a Radnyar Klavan 2 days before the window shuts type of player. I think that plan will already be in place. I wrote something the other day. I don't think they'll ever look at it. But, you know, if you wanted to use Gruitt there, then he's got great numbers for what we do at centre-half, or what he did at holding midfield. He's rash as anything, so he'd need a lot of training and a lot of discipline. But you've got options, is my point. It's one where it just feels like everybody else is kind of front-loading if they can. And I think the reason for that is that there is just a dearth of centre-backs in the game, even at sort of basic level. So where then Liverpool try and get involved in that market, I'm not sure, and I don't think they need to be honest.
I think that all this is always impacted by what other sides think they're going to do or are going to try and do. For instance, on Watford, Phil, as Dan's just mentioned there, if Watford don't raise the sort of money they'd like to raise for instance, selling Doucouré, then they may be more open to selling Sarr for a lower amount, or they might decide instead, well, we want to sell him for a higher amount. And that goes on right the way through football, because it is, as Dan's just said there, you know, it's interesting to me, there was a lot of links for very, very big moves, and maybe we'll still see something from Chelsea or Manchester City in the near future. Maybe Manchester United will stump up the cash for Sancho. I do wonder whether or not, as Dan's just phrased it there, a number of sides might actually take a little bit of a backward step, given how close we are to the start of the season, given the fact that pre-seasons are starting today for the vast majority of clubs. It is interesting that, you know, a lot of these teams have not got their players in and don't look like they've got a very clear path towards getting their players in.
No, I mean, you look at some of the Premier League teams, for example, like Tottenham and Arsenal being two. Now, I'm not really sure what either of them are going to do this summer. I think that Arsenal signed Willian, which I think is mad. I think to give a 32-year-old a three-year contract is crazy. But then what else are they going to do? What are these teams planning to do? Is there a short-term thing that these teams want to do? Because if there's a short-term thing, that's possibly not the best idea in the circumstances, because if your short-term thing goes wrong, that can have serious negative impacts on what you want to do long-term. No.
But also, Phil, I'd say if you're doing something short-term, if it's a short-term move, and so where I have got a bit of sympathy for the Willian thing is, he'll be back in pre-season training for them. If you're going to do something that's meant to only last 18 months, you could very much do with getting this time right now with the footballers. You don't want to be leaving a short-term move until October the 4th.
No, I agree completely with that, but then it's how your short-term thing then impacts what you're going to do over the longer term, and that's sort of one of the huge questions at the minute. Like, United as an example, they were 2-1 down in a Europa League semi-final last night. They made the first substitution in the 87th minute or something. Now, to me, that doesn't spank of a team that should be going out and buying Jadon Sancho. That, to me, looks like a team who should be going out and making a serious investment to their bench, almost. Not necessarily players who aren't good enough to start for them, but players who can come in and do a job in a lot of games next season, because that Manchester United team could be dead on its feet by November at this rate, off the back of having just played constant football since pretty much June, obviously not March. But so what are these teams trying to do? What's the thought process? And I almost think that a lot of the talk that they had 6 weeks ago, they may now have sat down and thought, do you know what, maybe that's not the best idea for this season. Maybe this, you know, Manchester United's goal for next season is going to be to get back in the Champions League. Our goal isn't going to be to get back in the Champions League. We can regress massively and we'll still come second next season, at worst. The drop-off for us to go backwards and it's a matter for the long-term future of the club, it's a huge drop-off, whereas the other teams have to approach it differently.
What are you expecting from us, Phil? Are you expecting this Thiago thing to stand up? Are you expecting there to be a move for someone like Ismaïla Sarr? Are you expecting there to be an addition somewhere? Do you think that this is all is contingent upon sales? What's your impression at the moment?
Well, I think the Thiago thing is, I think a lot of it is what Dan said about people giving themselves ways out, because one of the reasons I think the club sort of would like to give themselves a way out of this is I don't necessarily think they're interested in a midfielder. I think they may be interested in Thiago because he's a fantastic footballer, as opposed to going, we need an extra midfielder. So if we don't sign him, they don't really want the blowback of, oh, well, you said you wanted a midfielder and you didn't get a midfielder, etc., etc. I think the centre-back area is a little bit of a concern for me. If we go into the season with three centre-backs and not another midfielder, I think if you bring Thiago in, I think Jono made a good point on the gutter that if you bring Thiago in, it really does enable Fabinho to be an option at centre-back, just because you've got a lot of numbers who can play sort of the deep-lying role in front of the back four and that kind of thing. But if there's no Thiago and Fabinho's the fourth-choice midfielder, that feels a little bit like fourth-choice centre-back, rather. That feels a little bit light for me. And the lack of centre-back link I just find really a little bit interesting. That, to me, sort of makes me think there's legs in the Thiago thing.
Do you think, Damien?
I'm having that all day. I mean, you know, the centre-back thing, of course, you know, Gruitch, there's a great shout from Dan. He sees things I don't, and I really like, you know, his insight on that. But if he's rash, then he's the perfect substitute for Dejan Lovren, isn't he? You know what I mean? So, I don't quite see that happening. But yeah, I mean, Thiago's a washed player, and sometimes these things just come from left field. And if we've got uncertainty with Genie and the club are frightened about what happened with Emre in the end and it runs out, then if Thiago can come in and that can allow Fabinho to drop back and we can subtly change the style. And we're going to be playing against a lot of teams basically who are already beaten before they turn up at Anfield. Or they're going to be seeing that the only way that they can possibly get, you know, anything from Anfield is to be really deep and that. It does give us the opportunity a little bit more to play like that. So, yeah, it's just one of these unusual circumstances. And going back to it all, Liverpool are such a well-run club. You know, and there's people out there who want us to go out and buy a centre-back that can come in and cost loads of money and be the next best after Virgil in Europe. Or they want us to go and sign Timo Werner, you know, who can't quite get in the team at the moment. But we've got so many areas where we've got these boss players. Let everybody else make the mistakes. Let everyone else spend that money. Because, you know, if we don't quite come up to the level that we did last season, we're still going to be in a very good position going forward. And strategically, the club needs to not just look at not next season is, but what the season after that and the season after that is. I mean, you know, the recession that's going to hit football, that's already hit football, is a real serious impact. And so being smart and having Thiago and then dropping Fabinho back, something like that, yeah, I think that's a solution, you know, I really do.
This recession, Damien, I think, you know, for instance, there was something came out about Real Madrid in an Athletic piece that was talking about Aston Villa, but within there it was sort of saying how difficult it'll be for a lot of sides right the way across Europe this summer. And I think it's something which is, football wants to always act as though it's beyond this sort of stuff. And football clubs, I think, try to act as though they're bigger financial institutions than they actually are. And that's why it always comes as a shock. It always comes as a shock that, for instance, Tottenham take out a massive loan. When Liverpool tried to furlough people, it genuinely came as a shock to our support. Yeah. That a football club would feel as though it needs to do this. Because what football tries to do is act as though it's a ridiculously rich set of businesses, a ridiculously rich sport. And it is. It's obviously significantly richer than, say, rugby league. But I think that people, you know, in general, the scope of how serious all this is and how serious it could sustain and the lack of certainty still isn't hitting people. I think it's going to hurt a lot of clubs, and the way it hurts clubs is going to be different for every club.
Oh, yeah. You know, and only the smartest have got a chance of surviving, you know, compared to where they were. I think, you know, there's going to be serious trouble for a lot of clubs out there, you know, maintaining the status. You know, and let's not kid ourselves. That was the reason why football resumed in this country, because the clubs just could not afford not to have that TV money, because basically they've already spent it. And so, and it was like a question of cash flow for them all. And that's why I think, really, that it just needs to be a season of calmness and sort of look around and, you know, be inventive of what you have. I mean, look at Jürgen, like, you know, at Dortmund, he'd get his best players taken off him after he does something. He hasn't got that problem now. So just, you know, be cautious and, you know, I don't mean be limited. I don't mean say, right, you know, we're battening down the hatches, we don't need anybody. There's always going to be someone out there. We don't want to be in a situation like Man City where they don't adequately replace a centre-back and, by God, it cost them. But I don't think Liverpool are in quite that position. So it's just a question of being steady. And, yeah, it's really serious out there. A lot of clubs, I think Liverpool, us all kicking off about it, about the furloughing thing. I think a lot of clubs behind the scenes were gutted about that because they wanted a furlough as well. And if it was good enough for Liverpool, they wouldn't get the adverse publicity. But, yeah, people are going to be shocked about, you know, how fickle the whole thing is.
The flip side of it, Phil, though, is it's perfectly valid for people to point out Liverpool don't spend anything on transfer fees last summer. Liverpool have a summer without fees last summer. That also, Liverpool are in a situation where they are the seventh richest club in the world as per the Deloitte list. They pay the fifth highest wages, supposedly, up until the end of the 2019 season. That's likely to have increased that wage bill, it's fair to say. But, you know, Liverpool haven't been that dynamic in the market in terms of putting money in for transfers. Now, that doesn't have to be seen as a negative because of how well they've done to this point. But there is an argument, isn't there, that there could well be money there at the club. There could well have been money there at the club, and that now it might be a decision not to spend. And that's a policy decision, Phil, is my point here, that Liverpool could be making a policy decision. Mm. And that is, and if you make a policy decision, you can make an incorrect one.
Yeah, I mean, the policy relates to sort of the uncertainty, though, I think, in terms of you may go, well, we've got this money and we could invest this money. But then you go, well, maybe further down the line, we might need this money. Like, for example, I think we've all got access or have a season ticket, don't we, all four of us? None of us have paid for a season ticket yet. That means that another 20-odd thousand people haven't paid for a season ticket. That means that the executive boxes haven't been sold. It means the £3,000 a year season tickets haven't been sold. The club usually get about 60 million quid into the club in July and August, and June and July and August. That just that number's zero. So the policy makes it's sort of hard to argue with that policy when it could potentially be safeguarding the future of the entire club. I think it's obviously it's not what you want to see, and it's not what you want to hear, because what we want is to go and win the league next season with the best footballers possible. And we didn't sign anyone last summer and that worked fine. You can't necessarily, not stagnate's not the right word, but you can't just let the same players go to the well for all the time. And there's possibly needs to be some form of middle ground, but I don't think it's as easy as, oh, well, we spent no money last year, so there's a bit of money knocking around, we can go and spend it now. Because that money could genuinely be responsible for paying the players the wages for a long period of this season. If we can't get in the ground, that's 90 million quid gone. Just not coming in.
I'll just come back to you on it, Phil, though. The idea, yeah, of, I think people, the concern is, my concern is, and this is where the sort of the Thiago thing could go either way for me in that sense, is that he is 29. Mm. And that, you know, you are looking at a squad, you know, whose average age was slap bang on the league's average age, but where, for instance, most of its principals were 26, 27, 28, 29. They were all that age. And, you know, it doesn't take much to look at, for instance, Barcelona get thumped 8-2 by Bayern Munich. And I'm looking at a side that's very much got old together. And this is, you know, got old together and also got old together on a lot of money. You know, Liverpool have got Barcelona have got the highest wage bill in the world. Liverpool have got the fifth highest wage bill in the world. My point here is that, you know, you can quite easily get yourself into a position that if you're not constantly looking to refresh, you could all of a sudden be looking around and having a lot of lads who are in their early 30s who just cannot play with the intensity that you need.
This is definitely true. I mean, there is also an argument in this type of thing that Thiago, for example, he might help you win next season. And if you win next season, that enables you to bring more money in for next summer, where you can then go and do the refreshing next summer. Like, there almost might be a plan for 2 or 3 years down the line where they go, well, hold fire a little bit, and then we can replace the front three at the same time when they're all 31, 32. And that might not seem a particularly great idea now, but if that's what they're thinking, it sort of explains a little bit of caution. Now, I don't think that's a particularly good idea. I think there should be someone around the age of 22, 23 coming in this summer who can learn how the team plays, and then he's 24, 25, he's able to come in and he's able to fly at them. I also wonder if there's a serious thing about Sancho for next summer if he doesn't go to Manchester United. I think that would be perfect. And if it's a case of, well, maybe we need to be cautious to be able to afford Jadon Sancho, then again, is that a policy that you don't like in the short term, but in the long term it helps you? I think everything about this summer is just the great unknown, everything. And I think it is really hard to form hard and fast, strong opinions about practically anything, because if two people are doing two different things, which seem to be a lot of what people's issues have been with Liverpool for the last month, it's like, well, they're buying him, we're buying no one, why can't we do that? But that to me is based on an assumption that they're right and we're wrong, and I don't really see how someone is able to sit there and say they're definitely right and we're definitely wrong. It might be that we're wrong, but I just think there's so many unknowns that it's almost just a case of sitting back and accepting you don't know.
I think you can sit back and accept that you don't know, Dan. You can also sit back and accept that the people who are currently in the position that they have to make the big choices have been getting a lot right. You know, they haven't got everything right, far from it. It was about 12 months ago on a show, we were not arguing, because I think the opinion was arguably maybe a bit too consensus on the show around the trademarking thing. You know, I don't think it's as simple as saying Liverpool have got everything right for a period of time. But in terms of the playing squad, Liverpool have obviously done, you know, if you can never do 10 out of 10, well, Liverpool have done 9 out of 10 in everything that decisions they've made around the playing squad for the period. But it is important, isn't it, to say that these are decisions. And for me, I think that's what frustrates people who aren't necessarily in agreement with me and this debate, is that people act as though everything's a foregone conclusion. That isn't the case, I don't think. I think that Liverpool are making decisions here, policy decisions about how they want to run the club. That doesn't mean that they're not going to change their mind, they're not going to act differently, and Thiago could prove to be an example of that. But there are decisions being made, aren't there, within the club about what they want to do. They're not just victims of circumstance.
No, not at all. And, you know, it's Sean always says on the review, doesn't he, that law of averages, Liverpool are going to have to get one wrong soon. You know, there's going to have to be, in terms of sheer law of averages, unless it's sort of Everton's Anfield record, they're going to have to have another Loris Karius knocking up soon. It's just going to happen. It's bound to happen. But they're so diligent and they're so seemingly advanced in how they're identifying players that you wonder sort of whether there's it's that sort of driven for perfection, that there's the allowance for that. So, yeah, I mean, the other thing as well is that it's a point that's been made recently, and I'm wholeheartedly agreeing with it, is sort of think about why we're doing all this. Think about why we've done what we've already done in terms of sort of foregoing big transfers and for the sake of re-signing your best players, for example. You're doing it to reap these years now. You're doing it to sort of live the benefit of right now. You've had to do it in terms of sort of getting a squad and a mentality and a group together that is good enough to overcome a Manchester City side, first and foremost. But you're doing it in terms of legacy, and you're doing it in terms of building something that is sustainable over, you know, a period of 1-2 years. So if it's the case that... And the other thing as well with that is, you know, we don't know what Liverpool's front three looks like in 4 years. It could be Harvey Elliott, it could be Minamino, and any other that they sign in a summer or two. You know, they might have two of those players already there, is my point. And I fully agree with Phil on the 21 to 24 point. It's something I've mentioned in the last few weeks, but the answer of kind of we have to rebuild from outside, I think is one that... It's almost that sort of transfer idealism that the football fans have that no one really looks into in terms of we already got the answer there.
Just on the idea of, come back to you, Dan, on two of those players already there. You mentioned Minamino, you mentioned Elliott. For me, the most interesting one, and he did an interview with the club website last week, Brewster.
Yeah.
Brewster's always going to be interesting to me, and I'm probably going to end up boring people to tears about him. You see a footballer there who, to me, looks as though he's got all the gifts to play within 18 yards of any goal in the world. Yeah. He's got all the gifts within 18 yards. Whether or not where he is between yards 18 to 36, if you know what I mean, is possibly a bit of a question mark on him. But 18 yards is where, to me, he just looks the absolute business. Do you think he goes back out? Do you think he stays, you know, within that conversation as well? Shaqiri's been mentioned. You've obviously got Origi as well. Do you think Liverpool, when we are looking at all of this and all this uncertainty, does this create an opportunity for someone like Brewster to be able to say, well, listen, you know, I'm, trust me here, give me the equivalent of 14, 15 Premier League games this season and see where to go?
My thing is, if he goes back out, I would be less inclined to think he has a future. People might think that's odd, but if he goes back out, I'm kind of, he's on the sort of the train to us getting decent money for him, and him not being able to nail anything down, and them thinking that he can't, basically. I mean, we often get sort of hung up on shapes and systems. I wonder whether the look at him in training is sort of, what can you do when you drift into wide areas? Not, we're going to try and sort of mould you into the next Salah or Mane. We're not going to try and mould you into sort of a player who comes in off the left or whatever. But sort of, when you, like your point, Neil, no worries with you sort of anywhere around the 18-yard box centrally. But when you get in those wide areas, what can you sort of do? Where are you when the play breaks down and stuff like that? Those intricacies that we see. And yeah, I mean, but it does then fall back to the fact that if he stays, you probably are going to see a lot more of Liverpool being a bit 4-4-2-y. You know, wouldn't surprise me, for example, to see three or four games where he's got Sadio Mane next to him in the front two. And I think that'd do him loads of good, by the way. I think that'd do him tons of good. For me, he's going to absolutely blow up. And I thought it was interesting on sort of the transfer game he played, how many people would have sold him. And that's not to say that, you know, not to say that he might be a good player, just not in this Liverpool team. We've seen that with other good players. And I wonder whether, not to make Origi's job any harder, it kind of becomes this sort of battle to do the best Origi job, if you know what I mean. Because Origi doing... Divock Origi, for what everyone says about sort of he doesn't fit, he clearly has the fine role to do whenever he gets asked to do it, whether that's coming off the bench or starting. This manager has kept him around for a reason, because he sees his role as being A, different, and B, you know, a viable option for this team. Whether he sort of makes Brewster sort of compete with Origi for that role, I don't think it's a role that's been designed for Divock, is my point. I think it's a role that he very much wants filling in terms of an alternative sort of forward. And whether he sort of makes Rian that sort of player along with Divock or instead of, who knows?
Who's 4, 5 and 6 is going to be massive. I think, Damien, we've talked about Ismail Sarr coming in across the course of this show, just sort of on and off. Mm. We've mentioned Brewster, Minamino's got to mention, and Shaqiri's got to mention. And my point here is that, and we've done all this in the context of all these fixtures, and that's where I think, you know, when Dan says about, I think if Rian does go out at this point, when it looks like it will be intense, it looks like it will be a lot of games, that's where you would begin to worry for him a little bit. I hope Liverpool commit to him, I'll be really honest. I hope Liverpool commit to him, but I think it's going to tell us a lot in this mad season where it's very much going to be about holding on to certain players and having them as options. If Liverpool decide that Brewster is better served going out, they may be being kind to the player, but they may not be being kind to his Liverpool future.
Well, maybe not. I think he's the hardest one to call out of all of them, to be honest with you, because of his age and because you can see the talent that he's got. And then you're saying, does he fit into the system right now? Very confident lad, isn't he? Very keen to talk about wanting to compete at Liverpool, but also he seems to be open to the idea of being loaned himself. It just depends on who we can get in, doesn't it? You know, what can Liverpool get for Grujic? What can they get for Wilson? What could they get for the Shaq? Would that bring somebody in? It's very difficult, isn't it? I mean, Divock is the ultimate substitute, in my opinion. Love the bones of him. I just think Rian, he's just so hard to call on this. I can't quite put my finger on it, I've got to be honest with you, because yeah, I agree, put the ball in front of him, he'll bang it in the goal, but is he going to work across the line enough? Is he physically ready for that yet? Does he need to be another season away from Anfield? And in fact, does that really strengthen his hand when he comes back in? What about a half of a season loan? Maybe something like that. I just think it's so difficult based on the other players that we've got. I think he's the last piece in the jigsaw of the fringe players, that when he solve all the other ones, whether Shaqiri's staying or whether, you know, we can get decent money for Wilson or whatever we can do, then Brewster then comes back into the equation. I'd like to see him at Anfield and given a really good chance, because I think we could repent at leisure if we don't use this lad.
There's something, come back to you, Dan, on this, where the way Damien's phrased that, there, I think a lot of it, you know, Liverpool, I think, are being quite honest when what comes out into the press is, well, they want to see what the offers are for certain players. I think you can probably break them into three categories. Brewster on his own, as Damien's just argued there. Shaqiri and Origi may be grouped together. Grujic and Wilson may be grouped together. And that Shaqiri and Origi, they may well have the attitude of, let's see what the offers are. If not, we can see a pathway to using them. Grujic and Wilson, possibly. I think they may have the argument of, let's see what we can get for these, and only if it dips below a certain point will we want to move. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, the only thing I put to that is we never really know what these players want. And when, you know, that's the one thing they're not saying when they're in front of cameras. So Rian Brewster's agent might get on the phone soon today and tell him that Leicester are really in for him and they're going to make him centre forward with Jamie Vardy. How does that change things? Gini Wijnaldum might have two offers on the table that are going to treble his wages for the next 3 years. Loris Karius and Jadon Shaqiri might be saying they want to stay at Liverpool and Liverpool want to sell them. So sort of where the players are in conjunction with where the club is in an ideal world of selling them is always something that complicates things a little bit, and then that factors in with the fact of what's a player worth today. I think Liverpool's, I think when you, I mean, you sent something over this morning, Neil, of, and it looked at clubs who've got players out of contract next season. Mm. And I think where Liverpool's benefit here comes is that apart, there's no real issues, there's no real worries, there's no real sort of ransoms to be held in that sense. Liverpool hold the aces, and it's for all of the situation economically that's going to dictate over the next few years, it's still a buyer's market because there's still a dearth of there's still a marked improvement that clubs need to make to get anywhere near us. And that's going to be the ultimate aim. So I think Liverpool can sort of set the price accordingly, in my opinion, and with that use the premium, if you like, of, well, they're coming from a Jurgen Klopp side. They're coming from a team that's just won the Premier League and won a European Cup the season before that. So you know you're not getting you're not getting unprofessionalism, you know you're not getting someone who hasn't trained at the highest level or been around the best dressing room in world football for the past 2-3 years.
Which of those players do you expect to go, Phil?
I think the market's a little bit weird because I almost think that, I know Dan said it's a buyer's market, but I think if you've got a desirable player, it's a seller's market. If you've got an undesirable player, it's probably a buyer's market, because I don't think we can go out, for example, and say we don't want Harry Wilson, who wants to buy him, and then go, but he's going to cost you 20 million quid. Because I don't think there's a team who's got 20 million quid to spend who'd be looking at Harry Wilson as a sort of a priority point. But at 10 million, they might get him. Whereas United are after Jadon Sancho, and Dortmund are able to go 120 million quid or whatever it is. And they're in a position of power because they know that player is wanted. I think this is sort of the problem we have with offloading players at the minute. None of the players that we want to offload are players that we would necessarily think we have to keep, and that sort of probably knocks 20-30% off the valuation at the minute, I think.
Do you see it being maybe a little bit hectic when you're there for, get towards the end of September, when sides have played 3 or 4 games, when they're looking at what they've got and just thinking, Christ, we could just do with freshening X, we could do with freshening Y? I mean, it doesn't take much to imagine one side loses the first 3 games and all of a sudden there's an element of, we need, you know, we've scored no goals in the first three. Let's put 35 million on the table for Divock Origi.
Yeah, that would make perfect sense, but I don't think Aston Villa, for example, who've been linked with Origi, are going to pay 35 million for him now. But it is plausible that Villa do fail to score for the first 3 games and then panic. That is definitely plausible, but I don't think the players they're leaving were just in a particular position of strength to really maximise what they're worth.
Is this, Phil, I mean, I want to sort of bring this around to the general sort of attitude towards the season. Let's go back to laughing at our Mancunian friends. There was something I thought about Manchester City. And there is something about Manchester City in Europe where it's phenomenally joyless. And it remarkably to me feels as though it's marked at times by fear. Fear on the pitch, at times fear from the way the discourse of supporters that you get to see off it. It seems to me as though it's no laughs. And for me, the biggest thing, the most important thing when you're looking at this season that no matter what happens, we will be able to write off. Even if we win, even if we win the lot, we can write it off still as a bit of a mad season. Because if we did win the lot, it would also be absolutely mad and utterly unprecedented. So let's point that out as well. But it seems to me as though embracing this is going to be the key thing on and off the pitch, enjoying this and living without a bit of fear. And I think that that's, for instance, when I'm looking at Man City in Europe, this European journey they're meant to be on, it looks awful. It looks like it's no fun whatsoever when they've got some of the best players in the world. And I think that's my attitude towards this season is trying to be, listen, we've got to all get stuck into this and embrace these little questions that we're asking now and see it as all part of the dance.
Yeah, I think any sort of knocks that you get, you sort of just have to brush them off and get back up and not sort of overreact or anything, because it's going to be mad if you're playing football with such regularity. I think you'll probably get some really strange results. I would be very surprised if we got to the end of the season with the home record still intact. I would be surprised if someone doesn't come to Anfield and win this season, just because I think the format is set up for a little bit too much madness for us to be that consistent over the course of 19 games. You sort of have to be a little bit accepting of things like this, in terms of 90 points is a lot of points in a normal season anyway. The last two or three seasons, the last two seasons, we've gone massively above what it should be accepted for a football team to do. So if we do regress a little bit, especially in the circumstances, there just needs to be a little bit of, this is just how it is, and it is mad. It's going to be mental that they're going to basically compress the exact same amount of games in a football season into a month less. And you've got to get your head around the fact that it will just be weird for long periods.
It's something where, Damien, I think that it's important, therefore, to embrace, I think. And I think that that's, as I say, watching City being around, the sort of the City thing, the way the City thing's gone, the fallout to the City thing, to me, it just does not look enjoyable. And I don't mean that from a sort of, I don't really mean that at all in a, you know, if there are on the off chance any Manchester City supporters listening to this, I don't mean that in a smug Liverpool have got everything right and you're getting everything wrong way. I just mean it in a sort of a, this is meant to be, it's meant to be the best thing of your week. The footballers are meant to be, you know, hugely talented, highly driven professionals in their 20s and occasionally in their 30s, but they're meant to look like a gang of lads who all get on and push on and have a laugh. And I think trying to keep that essence is going to be the toughest thing throughout this campaign. I think everyone having that essence of we're all in this thing together is, I think, going to be the toughest part.
Oh, defo, yeah. I mean, what's happened with Manchester City? I just call it karma, quite frankly. I mean, you know, look at the whole way they've approached it. You know, how the club flipped from what it was. And the untold riches that they've spent. They've got a fabulous coach, Guardiola. They've been sensational to watch. They've took football to heights. Liverpool and Man City have driven each other on, haven't they? It's been fantastic. You know, if you look at it in that context, and most people inside that bubble wouldn't look at it in that manner, but that's how it is. But they've just they've thrown so much at it, and they've failed. They've come up short, and it must really taste really horrible to them. It must just be horrific. Going back to what you're saying about embracing things and that, who've we got better than the world? They've got the greatest manager in the world for keeping people together. We've got the greatest manager in the world for motivating people, for living in the moment, for looking at positives, for bringing the best out of people. And we've got a team that hasn't aged yet. Do you know what I mean? But what I'm saying, so, you know, we've got this forward line, haven't we, for example, and we know that we're going to have to replace them. But because the club's been run so well, and because Liverpool have had to compete and go past Man City, the blessing is that they've got the foundations right. And so they've got a lot of a squad there who know what's what. And so while Man City were like, well, we're quite happy today. We're not bothered about the European Cup because we've got the domestic, you know, monopoly there. And the following season, like, it's all right, we've done that. We want the European Cup this year. It never seems to be quite right for them. It does look like they're having an horrible time of it. Whereas if anybody looks from anywhere in the world at how it looks at Liverpool, everyone knows everyone's having a fantastic time. And the man at the top, Jürgen, is the main man responsible for that. And we've got so much. Like, and we should talk about who we need to replace and what options we've got. Because if we do stagnate and we don't look at it going forward, then we are going to go backwards. But I think Liverpool will look at it and think to themselves, well, the others are quite a bit behind here. And we don't have to take any risks. And we have what we hold. And I think it'll be good enough to get over the line. And then if other people want to make mistakes financially and get the personnel wrong or this and that, well, that's up to them. That'll make us even stronger. And I think it was last year, Jürgen said, when we were talking about signings and that, he said something to the effect of, no, this isn't the summer for that. And he was alluding almost that maybe next year to be it. And obviously, circumstances have come to pass. So maybe Liverpool are saying, if we can just hold the line here and show everyone how much we're enjoying life and we're just absolutely buzzing. We're absolutely smashing, you know, great football, great atmosphere and whatever have you. Maybe, I think these are great building blocks for next year. But yeah, Man City are a lesson in how not to enjoy yourselves when you've been given four ace cards and you still can't win.
It's funny, Carved, though, isn't it? Because sort of Liverpool has been the club for years because they've won so much, because they've been so illustrious, that there's always been that kind of pressure from within that you have to compete at Liverpool. But City feel like the ones... It feels like they've created this pressure cooker for themselves. Mm-hmm. And I wonder whether sort of, I mean, we know they didn't expect this sort of monumental achievement that Jürgen Klopp has brought to Liverpool. But on the same token, I think there's a part of them that thought after 17-18 they would have free reign of the whole of Europe for the next 5 to 7 years. And I think you can sort of tie the Bernardo stuff in too. I think you can sort of tie the Bernardo stuff in all of that, in terms of it's almost like we didn't get what we want, and now there's a sort of toys out the pram type of approach. And I'm not decrying them in any way. I think it's up to them, you know, however they want to see it. But it strikes me as odd that the expectation around Liverpool has always been so high, but we're almost the ones who are slightly more patient.
It feels a little bit like, for instance, the idea of, and I'm not picking on him, he has the terrible miss at the weekend, and I think he's spoken brilliantly in a number of different ways, and, you know, I think he's a very impressive young man, but something like Sterling going there to win things, and now he's looking back at the club he left, who've subsequently won the Champions League and the league. He's also won a couple of leagues in there, and they were the first team to do the domestic treble, but all of it doesn't seem as though they're all sort of cutting loose and having a fantastic time. And that could change, Damien, couldn't it? You know, they could come back very, very strong, City, and this isn't just about City, but they could come back very, very strong. But next year is going to be about how well you take your knocks.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, look at Liverpool, but, you know, the journey that we've been on, you know, from Kiev onwards, at some point Liverpool are going to have a dip, aren't they? And this could just be the natural chain of events of what's happened with Man City. They make the odd mistake in the transfer market, or they get the odd injury, and then the players are just like, and the manager are just like drained, and then they see this rival who they weren't expecting. You know, I mean, I think a lot at Manchester City probably thought, well, we've bought this league, we've probably bought the European Cup as well. I think Chelsea felt that way in 2005. You know, if we can smash this league and it's really good, by rights now, we should go on in Europe. It ain't like that. You know, it's difficult, isn't it? So Man City will be back. They're a, you know, very attractive team to watch. You know, I do enjoy watching them when you know the result doesn't count, because they're such a threat. And it is about taking the knocks. And one thing that Man City have surprised me with is that it started to look like a glass jaw, hasn't it? Yeah. It really has. And this is where Liverpool are much more resilient. And it's not winning ugly, is it? It's about being pragmatic and learning how to win in different ways. And it seems to me Man City have learned how to win in the most spectacular way most often. But Liverpool have learned how to win more often, and that's the secret. And if you go back to the morale of things, you know, you've got... I like Guardiola. I think he talks very respectfully. Some of the players are sensational. I've got no problem with De Bruyne getting Player of the Year. I think he's a sensational player. There's all these things. You can make other argument points, and, you know, I'm happy with that. But Jürgen seems to be better at keeping... he makes a point, doesn't he, of saying you can definitely have too many players, and that creates its own problems. And maybe that's just the pinch point of where he's got, where I can just keep that camaraderie by just not having too many, just one or two too many egos in there, and it unsettles the ship. Yeah, I'm gutted for Man City, honestly.
last question is, what's a reasonable points expectation? The way I'm going to do this is I'm going to name a number of points going upwards, and I want you to stop me at the points total you'd take. And I want you to be serious about it. So I'm going to start at 80. And if you want to stop me at 80, you can stop me at 80. But as each of you stop me, and we'll have a little chat about it. So this is the point you'd take. Guaranteed, Liverpool will get this many points next season. 80, 81, 82, 83, 84. Play along at home. 85, 86, 87, 88.
Take 88.
You'd take 88 now?
Yeah, take 88. I think that's still a reasonably good points total that puts you right in the mix every year. If we got 88 points, you're not going to look back on a season and go, we've not had a good season there, we've done badly. I mean, it might not necessarily win you the league, but it's still, Manchester City still have to improve to get 88 points from where they were last season. And there's sort of an assumption with Manchester City that they'll stop losing these games, that they'll go back to the team who's got 100 points and 98 points and whatever, and they just have to basically start next season and turn up and do that. And I don't think that's the case. I think there might be a little bit of an issue there. There's a piece in The Athletic this morning from Sam Lee, who's the Manchester City reporter, and it's sort of hinting that there's a little bit of unrest and the players are a little bit doubtful of what Guardiola's doing and some things like that. Not massively, like it's not like a piece that the warning signs are out and his job's under threat and the players are going to have a revolt in the dressing room, but just that it's going to take something for them to kick on and improve. And I'm just not sure that, especially in what is technically Guardiola's last season, because his contract expires next summer. So if you're sort of looking at that, could create uncertainty where they're looking at, well, this manager's not here next season, so if he does something and I don't like it, what do I do? Do I just ignore him or do my own thing and that kind of thing? It's
Phil, do you think that Chelsea and United, say, for instance, possibly Leicester, I can throw other clubs in if you want, but do you think everybody else has just got too much to make up?
Yeah, I mean, I think the best way of talking about how much they've got to make up, Paul Scholes, and after the match last night, he's going, oh, I think he said something like, you know, United's goal next season should be to get the gap to Liverpool down from 20 points to 10. And I'm like, Paul, it was 33. It wasn't 20. He's talking about halving the gap down to 10 points. Halving the gap halves it to 16, 17. It's a long way for them to go, particularly with Chelsea's defensive issues and Manchester United's lack of squad. I think if you come 80, you come second as an absolute worst. If you get 80 points next season, the worst possible thing you will do is come second, and maybe even 75.
Okay. So Phil, was that 87 you took or 88?
88 it was. 88.
Yeah, 88. I just said that. Okay. So Phil's took 88. Play along at home. 88, 89, 90.
I'm taking 90.
You take 90?
Yeah, I would, yeah. Yeah. I think, teams have to improve to get past us, don't they? I think it'd be difficult for Liverpool to maintain, with that schedule, to maintain what they've achieved in the last two seasons. And as long as Liverpool are going deep into the European Cup, yeah, and they post 90 points, for the next five seasons or six seasons, it usually would be enough. And there's no guarantees in that. I just think that, we've had a bit of a smirk about Man City, and no more than, good-natured football stuff that we should be able to have. They'll be really hurting. They will know that they've let themselves down and there's a lot of boss players there. They'll be aware of the mistakes that they've made. And at this point in time, they still might be able to get the checkbook out and do something. And then what if Liverpool get a couple of injuries and a little bit of bad luck and whatever? So they are dangerous. So I do accept 80 points could be a runner-up total for next season. But there is one team in there, one variable in there, and it is Man City. And if they get a couple of things right and the ball runs for them, I think 90 points is the minimum that we'd need to get past them. And I think we'll do it, by the way. I think we'll do it.
Okay. Excellent stuff. Okay, 90, 91, 92, 93.
Deal.
You'll deal at 93.
I'll deal at 93.
All the same stuff. You just think that 93 is just too much.
Two reasons. Firstly, let's not forget how good we are. 93 is not an unreasonable expectation for this team, and that is ridiculous in itself. But 93 points is something this team can aspire to and is more than capable of. Secondly, my only slight worry, after everything the lads have said, which is completely right, my only slight worry is City and their ability to flat track. And I can't see them flat tracking the way to 94 points, put it that way. But if it was 88. My worry is that they could possibly flat track themselves to 90, especially in a world where there's sort of no football fans and for the foreseeable anyway, and teams are, it's sort of that sort of environment that we've seen where teams are just going, well, if we get beat 1-0 by these, we might as well get beat 4-0, for want of a better phrase. But yeah, that's they're my two reasons.
Okay, rock solid. I've got you as a 27 wins, 7 draws, 4 defeats for Phil. 28 wins, 6 draws, 4 defeats for Damien. And 29 wins, 6 draws, 3 defeats for Dan. I mean, say what you want. We can talk about certainties and uncertainties. I'm quite confident that this Liverpool side can do all three of them. I've got full faith in the lads for that. 29 wins, 6 draws. Three defeats feels very, very plausible indeed. I'd quite like to do it with the old Arsenal's the old Arsenal invincible thing, where it's a lower points total, but we go the whole season. But listen, it's been a pleasure. There's still so much to sort out through the whole of this season, and you can enjoy it all with the Anfield Wrap. And enjoyment's the most important thing. I was sort of spending a bit more time than I normally spend. You might be surprised, actually. I don't spend very much time on social. And when I was off last week, I was spending a bit of time because it was my own free time, sort of just looking around. And the one thing to say is, let's not be scared. There's nothing to be scared of, first and foremost, because it's solely a game of football. But secondly, because we've got the best team, we've got the best gaffer. Let's enjoy this. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be absolutely bananas, and bits of it are going to be really, really hard. There may well be some lows to go with all the highs this season, but the point about that is it's how you recover from them, and no one should recover better than Liverpool. If we can't enjoy this, we can't enjoy anything. Thanks to Damien, to Phil, and to Dan. See you later. Sports Social Podcast Network.